What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. South Korean lawmakers, briefed by the country's intelligence service, said Wednesday the older half-brother of North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un was assassinated Monday in Malaysia. Kim Jong-nam fell ill at Kuala Lumpur International Airport after he felt like someone grabbed or held his face from behind. He died en route to a hospital. Aidan Foster Carter is an honorary research fellow at Leeds University in the United Kingdom.
Kim Jong-nam was in exile. He had been a bit of a critic, unwisely indeed, as it turns out, some years ago of his brother Kim Jong-un, and indeed of the whole idea of hereditary succession. But we hadn't heard from him for some time, and I assumed he was lying low and that he wasn't really a threat to anybody. But it would seem, and of course we are running ahead of anything proven here, it would seem perhaps his half-brother thought differently.
Malaysian authorities said they'll perform an autopsy. There are no suspects currently in custody. Kim Jong-un once considered the heir apparent to succeed his father, Kim Jong-il. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson Tuesday hailed the arrival of the new Gambian government, the part of the new government of President Adama Barrow, to reintegrate into the Commonwealth of Nations, and he sought to improve bilateral ties.
In particular, we talked about what we can do with education, and there's a lot we can do, we think, there, a lot we can help with on the security front, perhaps on your wonderful tourism industry.
The visit to the capital, Banjul, is the first stop on Johnson's Africa tour that will take him to Ghana, South Africa, and Burundi. The Gambia, emerging from 22 years of autocratic rule by President Yahya Jammeh, who was defeated at the polls in December but refused to step down. He went into exile last month. This is VOA News. The White House said Tuesday that President Donald Trump was advised weeks ago that National Security Advisor Michael Flynn misled Vice President Mike Pence about pre-inaugural contacts with a top Russian official. White House spokesman Sean Spicer said the retired general was not accused of wrongdoing.
The evolving and eroding level of trust as a result of this situation and a series of other questionable instances is what led the president to ask for General Flynn's resignation.
Spicer said the president had been reviewing and evaluating the matter before Flynn was forced to resign late Monday. American University scholar Nora Ben-Sahel called the resignation extraordinary.
Well, it's unprecedented to have a national security advisor resign within 24 days of taking office. We've never seen anything like that before in the national security realm or even in a previous administration to have someone leave office so quickly.
Flynn said he had inadvertently briefed Pence and others with incomplete information regarding his phone calls with a Russian diplomat. Reports suggest they spoke about lifting of U.S. sanctions against Moscow. Philanthropist Bill and Melinda Gates, in their annual letter on progress their foundation made in reducing child mortality, said joint efforts have saved the lives of 122 million children since 1990. Melinda Gates spoke Tuesday with VOA.
It makes me even more optimistic about what we can do in the future, because not only has this progress been made about lives saved, about people lifted out of poverty, but it's accelerating now, particularly in the last 5 years. So there is so much more that can be done.
The Gates Foundation has been involved in mass vaccination campaigns addressing malnutrition, access to contraceptives, and efforts to empower women in society. Authorities in California, who ordered the evacuation of tens of thousands of residents near the Lake Oroville Dam, have lifted the order, declaring the risk of collapse of an eroded emergency spillway significantly reduced. Engineers drained enough of Lake Oroville so the emergency spillway will not be used. The U.S. Central Bank chairperson Janet Yellen Tuesday held out the possibility of an interest rate hike at its next meeting in March or at the latest in June, indicating a delay would be unwise.
At our upcoming meetings, the committee will evaluate whether employment and inflation are continuing to evolve in line with these expectations, in which case a further adjustment of the federal funds rate would likely be appropriate.
That spurred buying on Wall Street, especially bank shares, sending stock indices to new record highs. NATO allies Wednesday meet with the new U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis in Brussels, who has voiced support for the transatlantic defense partnership despite campaign rhetoric by presidential candidate Donald Trump. The 70-year-old alliance is outdated. Mattis is expected to push for greater burden sharing by the alliance's other members. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone announces dates for the country's general elections.
Today, I have again instructed my office to put forth a public notice announcing that parliamentary and local council elections will be held a little over a year from now on March 7th, 2018.
The Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. More than 100 people are killed in clashes between the DRC army and a local militia. The FAO holds a meeting on armed worm outbreak in southern Africa, and South Sudan reacts to a confidential UN report warning about the rise of militias under the loose command of the SPLA and the rebels.
First of all, I don't understand what the report means by militias that are out of control. What I do know is the fact that there are a number of rebels that are actually determined to fight the government through killing civilians indiscriminately.
Atain Wek Atain is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir, and Valentine's Day celebration knows no ethnic difference in Burundi. Those stories, plus our Black History Month facts and contest, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone has become the latest African country to announce it will hold elections next year. President Ernest Bai Koroma says all four elections will take place in a single day in 2018. From Freetown, reporter Kelvin Lewis has the details.
In a nationwide broadcast, President Ernest Bai Koroma announced the dates for the coming elections.
Fellow Sierra Leoneans, on the 10th November 2011, I caused my office to announce the dates for the 2012 local council and parliamentary elections. It was a little over a year to those elections. Today, as envisioned by our constitution and in line with established practice, I have again instructed my office to put forth a public notice announcing that parliamentary and local council elections will be held a little over a year from now on March 7th, 2018. Having consulted with me, the National Electoral Commission will also announce that the presidential election shall take place on the same date.
There had been some controversy over the announcement of the election's dates. President Koroma has served his two terms in office and is not eligible to stand again. But opposition parties had accused him of wanting to prolong his stay in office, and they say that was why he had refused to announce the dates. The president himself had used the public forum to respond, saying he will go by what the constitution says. The Elections Monitors Group National Elections Watch, or NEW, had issued a press release calling on the National Electoral Commission to announce the election's dates. This was followed by an ultimatum issued by the leader of the Alliance Democratic Party, Mohamed Kamaremba Mansare, who said that if the elections body does not announce a date before the 23rd of February, he would lead a demonstration to their office. Despite the announcement, politicians are still arguing whether the dates announced fall within the constitutional limits. For his part, President Koroma has gone on to warn citizens, saying they must conduct themselves within the law.
Fellow Sierra Leoneans, announcement of the dates for elections is not an announcement for the start of the campaign period. The commencement of the campaign period will be announced by NEC. When that time comes, we expect every party and every individual to follow the rules and regulations set forth by the appropriate authorities. Political activity is no excuse for breaking the law. My government is determined to ensure peaceful and orderly elections, and anyone caught disturbing the peace or violating the laws in the name of campaigning or other political activities will meet the full force of the law.
With the election warning and 21 days to go, President Koroma now has barely 386 days left in office. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
The South Sudan government says its military continues to be professional in accordance with the rules of engagement as it fights to protect the country against rebels who it says are killing civilians indiscriminately. This comes as the French news agency, citing a confidential UN report, says the war in South Sudan has reached catastrophic proportions for civilians. The report said the rise of militias under the loose command of the SPLA or the rebel commanders is spreading the fragmentation and dislocation of the country. Atain Wekatain, spokesman for President Salva Kiir, says South Sudan has no uncontrollable militias and that the use of such language is demeaning to the country's Liberation Army.
First of all, I don't understand what the reports mean by militias that are out of control. What I do know is the fact that there are a number of rebels that are actually determined to fight the government through killing civilians indiscriminately. There are no militias that should be out of control. We have the army, which is national army, and we have those on the forest who are actually killing the civilian. But the army is doing its best to ensure that it protects the civilian. Whatever is meant by the militia that are out of control, I don't understand. You know, this is a language which is completely disparaging and is even demeaning the sovereignty of the country.
It says that the rise of militias under the loose command of the SPLA, that's the National Army. So this is assuming that there's some militias or some aspects of your army that is loose, that is carrying out some violence.
Well, it's completely rubbish. It's complete rubbish in the fact that the SPLA is doing its best as an army of the nation, like any army in all the other nations. But because certain sectors of international community have started to disrespect the people of South Sudan and disrespect the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan, they would want to use the names militia to describe the army that has liberated this country. The same army that liberated South Sudan is the same army which is still in operation. By calling them a militia is a disparaging, and I would want those who have written this report to withdraw the word militia.
What is your government doing to stop the fighting that is going on in South Sudan?
The government has given clearly the indication that without implementing the peace agreement or the solution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, South Sudan will be in a constant war. We saw the agreement as a material that would actually return the country to normalcy. Therefore, we decided, you know, faithfully to implement it, the peace agreement. The situation has improved, you know, significantly, but our country has been betrayed by the fact that there are people who write such reports, you know, so that they scare off those who would be actually helping the government of South Sudan to conclude the peaceful conclusion to the problem.
What do you have to say, for example, to what some people are saying is a continued harassment of activists or critics of the government, yet at the same time, your government is talking about national dialogue?
I don't understand what they would actually mean about harassment of activists, if at all there is anything of such kind. But to be honest with you, South Sudan remains as one of the countries in which freedom of expression has been allowed. And those who call themselves activists, you know, might have been rampant in the way they criticize the government of South Sudan, even when they are inside the government control area.
The UN Secretary General is asking the Security Council to act so that political talks will be revived. The last time I was speaking to someone in your government, someone told me that the international community says that Riek Machar, if he ever want to come back, he should come back during the election. Is that the view of your government? And if that is true, how can fighting stop? And how can any talks take place? How can any dialogue take place?
Concerning those who say that Riek Machar should come back to South Sudan in 2018 to run the election, they are missing some points. One fundamental point is that Riek Machar can only return to South Sudan when he renounces violence. If he has not renounced violence, then he cannot come to South Sudan, just only to run the election. We cannot put our citizens in a limbo again by allowing such a warlord, you know, to come back to South Sudan to run for political post of any kind, just to return to violence when he loses the election. Because the people, I don't think the people of South Sudan have the stomach of voting for Riek Machar in any post as a political leader in the country.
Aten Wek Aten is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Today is Wednesday, February 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The UN Human Rights Office says more than 100 people have been killed over the past few days in clashes between the army and a local militia in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai Central Province. The fighting took place between February 9th and 13th in the territory of Dibaya. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Tensions in the area of persistent conflict have been growing since April, with the emerging friction between the customary tribal chief and authorities. The situation reached a fever pitch in August when the chief was killed by Congolese armed forces. UN human rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell tells VOA that since then, the local militia has become radicalized, attacking institutions viewed as symbols of the state.
A lot of the people fighting with the militia, they are children. They have been recruited by the militia leaders, and that is something that we strongly condemn. I can't say exactly who the victims were, but we're given to understand that the majority of the people who've been killed were militia members.
Throssell says the armed forces reportedly opened fire indiscriminately with machine guns last week when they saw the militia fighters, who were armed mainly with machetes and spears.
One of the incidents did take place on the 9th of February, when we understand there was an incident in a market. And that may account for the fact that about 39 women were killed, that they were caught in the fire.
The UN Human Rights Office says it is deeply concerned about the high number of deaths, adding it suggests an excessive and disproportionate use of force by the soldiers. The agency is urging restraint to minimize damage and injury. The agency says it has documented atrocities committed by both sides since August. It is calling for an independent investigation into human rights violations and abuses committed by the Congolese army and militia in the ongoing conflict. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization is holding an emergency regional meeting in Zimbabwe on the spread of armyworm worms in southern Africa, which is already struggling with food shortages. The pests are destroying crops in Malawi, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization organizes an emergency regional meeting in Zimbabwe on the spread of the four armyworm in southern Africa, which threatens to worsen the region's food insecurity. FAO coordinator for Southern Africa, Chimimba David Piri, said the meeting is aimed at finding a strategy to contain the situation.
Many countries are affected. It is also the countries that are going to offer solutions of a coordinated approach to control this. That now that we have this new pest here, the four armyworm, we cannot eradicate it. In the Americas, it has been there since 1957, and they have not managed to control it because it keeps changing, it keeps evolving. So we cannot expect that it can be eradicated. But we have to find a plan for managing it from now onwards.
Experts suspect that four armyworm might have come when the Southern African region imported maize from the Americas during El Nino-induced drought in the 2015-2016 rain season. The three-day meeting in Harare is also grappling with other plant pests such as the South American tomato leaf miner that has been found in Angola, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, South Africa, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The bug has caused extensive damage, according to International Red Locust Control Organization for Central and Southern Africa director Moses Okoba. He says the East Africa region is also on high alert amid the spread of H5N1, a highly pathogenic avian influenza in 12 West and Central African countries, and H5N8 in wild and domestic birds along the shores of Lake Victoria in Uganda. He says resources are being stretched.
So we need to very quickly think about how best and how quickly we are going to look at the region as a whole, not only in the outbreak areas, but also those states that are protected by the activities that are undertaken within the frontline states. So generally, I would say that whatever we have proposed in terms of protection is crucial to ensuring that food is secure in the region. Otherwise, we would end up with a disaster.
The FAO says more than 40 million people need food assistance in Southern Africa before the next harvest season that starts in March, with Zimbabwe and Madagascar being some of the worst hit by El Nino-induced drought. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Burundians came together to show how united the ethnic groups are on Valentine's Day. Intermarriages between different ethnic groups in the country are thriving. Moses Havyarimana has the story from Bujumbura.
In Burundi, there are three ethnic groups, with Hutu being the largest in the country, representing approximately 80% of the population. And 19% of the estimated 10 million people are from the Tutsi ethnic group. This Valentine's Day was celebrated as a day of love for all Burundians, most especially those who are married to their beloved ones from the different ethnic background. I met a woman in Bujumbura who didn't prefer to disclose her name. She expresses her feelings for her husband after being married for more than 23 years and now having 7 children. She says that she felt more love for the husband, and despite of her school criticizing people coming from the part of the country her husband is coming from, he loved him and that they got married. So until today, they are living in a very happy life. Burundi underwent 2 genocides committed by both Tutsi and the Hutu ethnic groups since the early 70s. The political violence that erupted in 2015 after the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza bid for a controversial term in the office was feared that could revive the ethnic tensions in the country. Intermarriage between Hutu and Tutsi is becoming a common practice in Burundi. Jean-Pierre married a Tutsi wife.
In our country, it is normal to have a wife from another ethnic group. It's normal. It's okay. We are the different ethnics. And we are married. We are having a good life together. We don't have any problem. We don't have any. Our relationship between me and my wife is good at all. Right now, it's about 8 years we are together.
An event for the first time of a kind in Burundi was conducted on Valentine's Day, for the lovers publicly telling their stories, especially those who are married from the different ethnic group. Mediatrice Baringayabo is the organizer of the event.
My idea of organizing this was to look into the love that existed even before colonial system, to see how can that love be embedded in today's ways of love and find the best way to help our Burundian society to lean on love in order to build a strong community.
As intermarriage in Burundi is becoming a common practice, Burundians believe this could be a way to reconcile the two ethnic groups that were once hostile to each other. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Civil society groups in Guinea-Bissau are planning protests next week to call on President José Mário Vaz to step down. A spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens, Carlos de Silva, talks to Ricky Strike about how they think Vaz's inability to honor commitments of the Conakry Agreement and put together a stable government is causing a crisis in the country.
Our movement, we are the voice of civil society movement. We are fighting for democracy and the state based on the rule of law. They are, for the moment, 7 other civil movements joining our organization.
What is your problem with the current government in Bissau at the moment?
No, the problem is, for the moment, we have 5 different governments just in 2 years. And in our country, we have what we call semi-presidential system, which means that the party who have the majority of the deputies, they are the one who take the government. But what's going on for the moment? José Mário Vaz is not one to follow the democracy rule, and he put down the government who won the election, and he chose someone that is not a part of the party. And he has not been respecting the rules of democracy in the country. Even the agreements, including political agreement, is an agreement that say that, okay, this is agreement you have to sign, a different company having a problem. Therefore, we are preparing against the president, demanding him to step down, as he cannot solve the problem.
What are you guys preparing to do against the government? Are you guys going to march? Are you going to protest?
Yeah, we're going to protest against the president, demanding him to step down, as he cannot solve the problem. As I say, as he's not being respecting the democracy rules, no other agreement, including Connect Agreement, to help the country come out of this ongoing crisis. And we are joining, we are trying to contact all different movements, civil movements, to join our protest.
That was Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bissau.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 15th. On this day in 1968, Henry Louis became the first African-American to lead a symphony orchestra in the United States, the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. He began studying piano at the age of 5 and later learned to play the clarinet as well as several string instruments. Also on this day in 1804, the New Jersey legislature approved a law calling for gradual emancipation for African Americans. By doing so, New Jersey became the last northern state in the U.S. to outlaw slavery. And during this Black History Month, we want to tell you about Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice. Before that, he was legal director of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. Thurgood Marshall won a famous case, Brown versus the Board of Education, which desegregated public schools in the United States. Marshall died on January 24, 1993, at the age of 84. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court has one Black Associate Justice, Clarence Thomas. Did you know that John Brown was a radical white abolitionist who is famous for his participation in an anti-slavery warfare in the United States for his 1859 raid on the Federal Armory in Harpers Ferry, Virginia? Brown hoped that the attack on the armory would rouse the local slaves to rise up and claim their freedom, but his plan did not completely materialize, and Brown was captured, tried in Charleston, Virginia, and sentenced to be hanged for inciting slave rebellion. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 15th. Congratulations to Angus Stephen Wara of Bamenda in Northwest Region of Cameroon, James K. Sibley of Suakoko, Bon County, Liberia, and Chinedu Ona of Wuse Zone 7 in Abuja, Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 14th question. Which African-American medical doctor discovered a system to store blood plasma? The answer, Dr. Charles Richard Drew. Now, here is our question for today, February 15th. Who is the first African-American to win the Miss America pageant? Once again, who is the first African-American to win the Miss America pageant? Send your answers to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Wednesday, February 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story.
putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.